Hey, let's give a big thank you to our worship team. Smattering. Yeah, you got me on this thing? We're good. Well, good morning, everyone. I am coming in kind of hot today because I drove until about 11:30 last night coming back from Tennessee. Packed my parents up this weekend. They're in Texarkana. They didn't want to drive straight. I don't know what's wrong with them, but me and Shay, we made the trip straight, a 12-hour trip. We were in a 36-foot U-Haul pulling an Explorer behind it, and it took us 17 hours to make that 12-hour trip. But we made it home safe last night. And hey, we are in the last two chapters of Acts, the last two chapters, and it gets exciting. So let's dive in to the last two chapters. We'll start in Acts chapter 27 today, and we'll go until we can't go too much farther. We'll go to chapter 27. Let me kind of set this up for you. Paul has been at the coastline with those kings, Agrippa and Felix and Festus, for 2 years, and finally, after meeting with King Agrippa and sharing his faith last week, King Agrippa said, I want to go to Caesar and let that court decide what happens to me. That's what Paul had said, and he said, seeing how he asked to go to Caesar, let's send him to Caesar. And so he's leaving the Middle East area by Jerusalem and is going to take ships to Rome to have his case heard in Rome. And so in chapter 27, he starts out on this journey. And what I see as we read this in a few minutes is Satan's got this thing. And I think it's something that we can put into our lives too to understand how Satan works. Is first, Satan's main way that he gets us is his lies, right? Satan will just flat out lie to us. He'll teach us lies. He'll tell us lies. But this is what I heard a pastor, Craig Rochelle, say one time, and I said, man, this is true. It says, if the enemy can't destroy you, then he tries to distract you. Distract you. His number one thing is, let's lie. Let me be a prowling lion. Let me destroy you. But Christian, if I can't destroy you, if I can't get you to stop what you're doing, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send all kinds of distraction into your life. Am I the only one? Am I the only one? Y'all have distractions. I mean, Marvin, we were praying about it earlier, right? That, you get going on something, right? You get going on something, and all of a sudden, one thing after another thing after another thing after another thing, and suddenly, this thing that Satan does where he distracts us, it throws us completely off course. I wrote down here is that whatever you focus on is going to feed something in your life. If you're focusing on something, it's going to feed something in your life. It's not so much what's happening in your life. There's going to be distractions. There's going to be other things going on. But here's the key for us, Christian. If we focus on the distraction, that's going to feed this thing in our life where we're pulling away from God. But if we focus on God, even in the same situation, it's going to feed our faith in God. So what are you focusing on? I always said this, that two people can look at the exact same situation and see two different things. Have you ever noticed that before? I mean, we talk to people who are having marital issues and problems, and one couple might have the exact same situation going on in their life that's causing their marriage to crumble, and another one has the exact same situation, but because of what they're focusing on, they can make it through it. One side, it's a completely hopeless situation. The other side, it's doable. We can make this. And the only difference is, what area are you focusing on? How is your experience in life? What is that? Is your experience in life just what is in front of you, what is visible, or is it what you're focusing on in that visible kind of spectrum that we go on. We were in San Antonio one time, I think we were, and they had one of these speed painters. Have y'all ever seen one of those speed painters that are out on the sidewalks? And like I said, all of a sudden they'll throw down a sheet of paper and you're just watching them. And this guy, he had spray paint, all this different kind of spray paint. And also, he just put this black enamel all over this canvas, and it was just pitch dark black. But when he was doing it, he had a kind of a can set in one corner where that black wasn't getting to that part of the canvas. And when he picked up that can, there was that white circle down here in the bottom corner with all this deep dark black. And then he took yellows and reds and oranges and just flung into that white section to where it was a sunrise coming up out of the darkness all of a sudden. And then he blended it together. And so in this picture, I just remember how clearly, how beautiful it was. Just the incredible sunrise that's in this corner. And then just the incredible darkness that was in the other corner. And if you were looking at that picture today, you know, what would you get out of it? If you focused in on the dark corner, right? Then you go, wow, there's a lot of darkness in my life. You know, if you focused in on the sun on the other side, wow, you know, what an incredible, bright, and vibrant thing that's going on in this picture. Or maybe you're focusing in the middle and go, hey, there's some of this and there's some of that. You see, one picture, but it all depends on what you're focusing on what you're going to get out of that. Paul, in his teachings, and what we're going to see here in the 27th chapter, is that Paul said, what you focus on is important. I wrote down Colossians 3:2. Paul said this in Colossians 3:2, set your mind on things of above and not on earthly things. He said, here's a thing to focus on in your life. As you're walking through this life, why not focus on things from above? Well, Blake, life's going on all around me. I'm not saying you don't pay attention to what life is throwing at you, but you're going to focus on the things from above. And just a few pages before that, in Philippians 4, verse number 8, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. For whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Did you see how he did that? He said, you want the God of peace showing up in your life? Focus on the right things. Now, the alternate to that would be focus on the negative things. And if you go to the alternate of that and you say, okay, now focus on things that are not true and are not right and are not pure and not lovely and not admirable, put that into practice, and the only thing you can get is the God of peace isn't going to be filling you up, right? It's what you're choosing to focus on. So as you think about how Paul wrote this, let's read what's happening here. Chapter 27, verse 1. When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, right? He wants to go see Caesar. Paul and some of the other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the imperial regiment. Now, the only thing you need to know here is they really were worried about Paul. They were worried about the Jews that were trying to kill Paul. And so they sent down one of their top guys. If he was part of the imperial regiment, that means that his main job is kind of like Secret Service, protecting, you know, the Caesar of the time. And so they sent down one of their main guys to get Paul from Caesarea on to Rome. We boarded a ship in Adrianum, about to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia, and we put out to sea. Artiscus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. Now, just a real quick thing right there. Did you notice it went back to us? This is where we can read, as we're reading Acts, if Luke is actually with him, the author of Acts, if Luke is actually there, he starts using those personal pronouns like us. If he's not there, he's using the more. So they took off and they did this and they did that. So we know that this is a really eyewitness report. I mean, Luke, the author, is actually here at this point. And so it says he took off. The next day we landed at Sidon, and then Julius, who's that centurion, in his kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends so that they might provide for his needs. And from there we put to sea again and passed the lee of Cyprus, and because the winds were against us. And when we had sailed across the open sea of the coast of Sicily and Pamphylia, we landed in Myra in Lycia. And there the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. So basically they had a ship ride to this part. And then the Egyptians at this time had trade routes all over the world. And so when you see it saying the Alexandrian, that's kind of a ship that would have come out of Egypt doing one of these trade routes that they were on. So this centurion, you know, went up to him and said, hey, you got to let us on board because we need to get to Rome. And so they did. And let's see. So there the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days, had difficulty arriving off of Cnidus. When the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete, opposite of Simone, and we moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Haven near the town of Lycia. And much time had been lost. Sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement. So Paul said to them, and I'll read to what he said. Let me paint what's happening here. There were times that it was good to sail. And then there were times that it was good just to get into a harbor somewhere and batten down. In this particular part of the world, the winter storms were horrible. And so if you were sailing in this part of the world, you wanted around October to get in somewhere, October, November, and batten down the hatches. And you're going to be there 3 or 4 months. 3 or 4 months you're going to be in that harbor while these storms, winter storms, are going through. And then, you know, around February or so, you'll be able to now have good weather to make it on to where you're going. So they were looking for safe harbor. Now, they hadn't planned on it happening that quick. They wanted to get farther along. So as they sail into Fair Haven, Paul says, men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives. But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and of the owner of the ship. And since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. This is a harbor in Crete facing both southeast and northwest. Southwest and northwest. I'll give you what's happening here. Why was that particular harbor not suitable for wintering? Well, if you go and look, it's a little bitty town. It's small. There's not much happening in Fairhaven. I think it sounds beautiful. We're wintering in Fairhaven. But Phoenix is more like Las Vegas, okay? You know, it's a happening place. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. If you are a merchant sailor, do you want to winter in the small town of Fairhaven, or do you want to make it on to Phoenix where there's lots of stuff to do, right? They wanted to get to the place where it was great and crazy. They were going, we can do it. You know, we want to move ahead. We were frustrated of staying here, but Paul was saying, no. Forget about your frustrations of not being able to winter in Phoenix and use your common sense and let's stay in Fairhaven. So here's your first point that I wrote down. I wrote down, the wrong focus feeds frustration. The wrong focus in your life will feed frustrations. The sailors had the wrong focus. Their focus was to get somewhere big, you know, where things are happening. Paul's focus was, no, I want to do what God wants me to do. I want to settle in here and be safe and protected. So here's your question today. Are there things in your life where you're frustrated? Are you frustrated with things in your life? And if you are, if you can pick out something that you're frustrated with, can I challenge you to say, what is your focus that you have in your life that's feeding that frustration? What are you focusing on that's causing your frustration to grow? And then the second challenge as a Christian is, can you move that focus and see if that helps that frustration? So like if there's a crying baby going on and you get off, no, just joke. You leave that baby in here. I can talk louder than her. I guarantee it. I'll tell you, here's just a basic kind of thing where it happens every day in our lives. Me and Shay, we had gone to Tennessee to help Mom and Dad. And I told you, you know, we made that 12-hour trip in 17 hours yesterday. Let me tell you where the state I do not like anymore. If you're from that state, I am so, so sorry. But Louisiana, me and Louisiana are currently not friends because me and Shay, we were doing great. You know, we decided to take the longer route from Tennessee to Houston because the longer route that went through Mississippi and Louisiana was basically interstate the whole way. And I'm going, I'm in this long truck. I want big old truck stops. Let's take the interstate route. And boy, we did good going through Tennessee. We went through Mississippi with nothing wrong. Texas, by the time we got to it, we were fine. But as soon as we got in Louisiana, I don't know. Man, every truck stop we stopped at was horrible. Shay was going, this is sketchy, Dad. I'm going, look, it's a truck stop. I don't know what, you know, unsketchiness is. You know, we got into Baton Rouge, and I don't know if there was what was going on, but on Saturday at 3 o'clock, there were traffic jams everywhere. We tried to get off to use the bathroom. I had to go really bad. We pull off on this exit, and there were like 30 cars at this red light waiting to go through the red light to get to the gas station, and the light turned green and 4 cars made it through. And I said, oh no, you know, it was just one of those things where I just got so frustrated. Shay, was I frustrated? I was frustrated. And look, here's why. Because my focus was on, I got to get home. You know, I need to get to where I'm going. It's late. This is adding hours onto my trip. And I was getting mad and I was getting frustrated. I'm going, you know, tomorrow I got to unload that truck as soon as the family gets here. And I'm just thinking, come on. You know, that was my focus. But, you know, here's what I'm thinking back. You know, I had this little phone that I had all kinds of sermons on that I could have taken that time to listen to. At the same time, you know, my little Spotify, I've got all kinds of Christian music that I could have just used that time to build up my faith if I had focused on that. I have one of the 5 top people in my life sitting in the truck with me at that moment. And I could have spent all that time just pouring in or having her pour into me. But instead, my focus was on, I want to get through here fast. And see how that focus fed my frustration. If I would just have listened to my own sermon and said, let's switch that focus around. I wrote down here that a really neat thing that you could read over real quick is when Paul was doing his talk in verse 10. There it is. He says, men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous. Now, you could skip over that real quick, but if you go back to the Greek right there, that little phrase, I can see, is not really a prophetic phrase. It's not that God has given me the prophecy where I can tell you this ship is going to go down. This is a bad idea. That phrase actually means, from experience, I can tell something. From experience, I can tell something. We know that Paul was in 3 shipwrecks. So the man had some experience in that. But he also had experience in all kinds of things where he just trusted God. So he said, from my experience, I can tell you what we need to focus on here. So I wrote down, God gets us ready for big frustrations by the small frustrations in our life. If we would just think about in those small frustrations, how do I switch my focus here? Then when the bigger frustrations of family or medical issues or financial issues or marital issues, when those big frustrations come up, we can be like Paul and we can go, you know, I can see what we need to do here. I think God gives us all some Louisiana in our life sometimes, right? Something for us to just kind of practice on. To say, God, when frustration comes up, I'm going to switch my focus. And we're going to see what that feeds. So let's keep on reading. It says, they wanted to go to Phoenix and winter there. There was a harbor in Crete facing, but yeah, okay, the storm, verse 13. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity. So the sailors won. They said, we're going to try to get all the way up to Phoenix. Paul kind of lost. So he said, so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. So they couldn't go forward anymore, and it finally just started making the ship go off course. Driven along. As we passed the lee of a small island called Calda, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure, so the men hoisted it aboard. So they couldn't even escape at that time. They were near an island, but the wind was so bad, the lifeboat, they couldn't even get it down. And it says, then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together because they were afraid they were going to run aground on the sandbars of Citrus. And they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. So it was just getting just shook by the waves. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. They were trying to get the ship lighter and because they were afraid they were going to sink. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. And when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, the storm continued raging. And we finally, notice what it said there, we? Did y'all catch that? We. It said, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. Well, that was the sailors, that was Paul, that was Luke, that was we. Isn't that amazing how sometimes those distractions become so much that we get to the point, even though we serve the creator of all the universe, that we start losing hope. It says, after they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, men, you should have taken my advice. He's kind of a I told you so kind of guy. And not sailed from Crete, but then you would have spared yourself the damage and the loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God. It will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. So he said, we're going to be safe, but no, this is coming. So the second thing I wrote down here is I wrote down point number two, the wrong focus feeds our fear. Do you have issues of fear in your life right now? Are you hearing about the upgrade in the virus where people are starting to get sick again? Are you hearing about, you know, financial issues in the world or wars in the world? Or maybe it's something just in your life where you're just going, I'm not frustrated. I'm fearful. What is feeding your fear? And here's what I think Paul would tell you. It's your focus. What are you focusing on that feeds your fear? Verse 24, it said, when that angel appeared to him, he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You know, we talked about that earlier a couple of chapters ago. That angel wouldn't have said, do not be afraid, Paul, unless Paul was afraid. And so that angel stood before him. He said, Paul, I can see you're slipping right now. He said, you need to switch your focus, right? He said, do not be afraid, Paul. He said, you must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all you sail with. You know, just in that, here's when you're battling fear, some things you can think about. Number one, God knows the situation you're in. God knows. He says, don't be afraid, Paul. I'm here. You know, you're in a fearful situation. I get it. But I know. I know that's going on. In your life right now, whatever fearful situation you might be in, that's your first step to say, I might be fearful, but God is here. He knows that this is happening. And not only does he know it's happening, he is present in this situation. So God knows, God is here, and then he says, God is graciously given. I love that phrase. Do you know that God is giving you things to get through whatever you're fearful of? And sometimes they're small. Sometimes they're people in your life. Sometimes it's just that a Bible verse. Sometimes it's a song. Sometimes it's just an encouragement from somebody at church. But God is here in the middle of your fearful situation. God knows you're going through it. And God is gracious. And he is giving you presently things to get through it. Now your key is, are you focusing on that? You know, are you focusing on the fearful thing? Are you focusing on the fact that God is here and that he is giving me things graciously to get through what I'm in the middle of? Last thing I wrote on this is God is using you. He said, God is going to graciously give you the lives of all that sail around you. Isn't that neat? When we get our focus right, Christians, Waller Baptist Church, me, when we get our focus right, then we can start passing it on to other people in our lives. Isn't that a beautiful thing? When we get our focus right, we can pass it on to other people. Our focus not only feeds us, but our focus has the ability to feed other people in our surrounding area. You know, one thing, teenagers, you need to know this. Kids, adults, you need to know this. That the friends you choose have the ability to ratchet up your focus. The friends you choose, college student, friends you choose, a 50-year-old man, you know, the friends you choose have the ability to just really tune in and really just laser your focus. And that could be the focus on the darkness or the focus on the light. And if you start choosing friends that are focusing on God, then they're going to help you ratchet that up in your life. But if you're choosing friends that are focusing on frustration and fear and faithlessness in their lives, suddenly you're going to find that focus in your life ratcheted up. So important, the people that you surround yourself with, because you know, what we see here is when Paul got this message from God, do not fear. He went to all his friends and acquaintances and said, take courage. A minute ago, they said they were all hopeless. Here's number three. This is the last point. The wrong focus feeds frustration in our life. The wrong focus feeds fear in our life. And of course, the wrong focus leads to faithless living. Faithless living. In verse 27, it says, on the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea when about midnight, the sailors sensed they were approaching land. Now, let's just stop there for a second. Biblical scholars have kind of measured it out. They think at this point they're 500 miles off course. 500 miles. When they start looking at all the physical things they're talking about in there, they said, this storm has just driven them off. And I don't like it, but it's good for us that Did you notice that after Paul got this message from God not to fear, after Paul got this message and he shared with everybody, take courage, the problem didn't stop right there. The problem was still going. All they had done was started to shift their focus in the middle of the problem. Listen, when you try to apply some of this in your life this week, you go, man, the pastor said, if I shift my focus, everything's going to be perfect in my life. No. No, it's not. What it is, though, is as you shift your focus, instead of feeding fear or frustration or faithlessness, it's going to start feeding hope as you shift your focus. It's going to start feeding a faith in a God. It's going to start feeding trust and courage. You know, it's still going to be the same issue. It's going to be that same painting. It's just instead of looking at the darkness, you're going to shift to looking at the light in the picture. On the 14th day, that make me a little bit mad at God sometimes. I don't know if y'all ever do this. Because I just get this picture of the storm and Jesus, you know, falling asleep in the boat. Y'all remember that? You know, the storm had been going on for hours. And you kind of think, man, hours of storm are pretty bad. I don't like storms and hours. And all of a sudden, Jesus gets up in the middle of it and just goes, peace be still. And that storm stopped. Y'all remember that story? And so we get in the middle of a storm and been in there for hours, and we're going, all right, God, I know you can still this storm. I know you can just say peace and it'll stop. Do it, God. And a day passes and it's still storming. And another day passes and it's still storming. And you go, I know he can, right? I know God can still the storm. So why isn't he making it stop? Why isn't God making the storm stop? And guys, I'm not wise enough. I don't know everything. I can't tell you why God does that. But I can tell you there is a reason for it. That God allows us to go through storms. That God allows us to battle this focus issue in our life. That God is creating in us something that is going to be stronger and better, and he's perfecting our character. And sometimes, instead of just a few hours of a storm, he says it's going to be 14 days of a storm. But we've got to focus on God, and we can make it to 14 days if we're focusing correctly. So here he is, it's 14 days, and we're still being driven. Verse 28, they took soundings. That means they're dropping long ropes, really cool. They tied knots every a foot or so, and they would just drop this rope with a heavy anchor on the bottom of it and kind of count how many knots go into the water. That's what sounding is. So they were sounding and found the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, they took another sounding again, and this time it was only 90 feet deep. So, you know, what this picture was it's getting shallower and shallower. That means you're getting closer and closer to land. Fearing we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. Well, just off subject, just real quick. There's actually an archaeological find where actually in this part of the Adriatic Sea, they kind of figured out where Paul might be, and they did this thing where they went looking, and sure enough, they found four anchors in a position that could have been this. Now, it not necessarily is, but it's just so interesting that, you know, that these things really happened. Because they would drop those anchors, and when they were ready to go, they would have cut them loose and just let the boat move on. So the four anchors, possibly they actually found those anchors. Who knows? Okay, here we go. Where were we? We were at the four anchors. A short time later, they took soundings, fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks. They dropped the four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboats down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. So they said, we're getting off this thing right now. Don't tell Paul, because Paul might tell us we can't do it. We're going to go down here, and we're just going to lower in the lifeboat to drop some more anchors, Paul. And so they did this, and it says, then Paul said to the centurion soldiers, unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved. So the soldiers trusted Paul and cut the ropes that held the lifeboat and let it drift away. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat just for He said, for the last 14 days, he says, you have been in constant suspense, have gone without food, you haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. Everybody had been not eating because of all the craziness, and also they didn't know how long they were going to be out there, so they were rationing their food. But he said, eat now. He said, you need it to survive. We're fixing to crash. You're probably going to be going in the water. You need to get some food in there so you can get some stuff going so your body can be warm. He says, not one of you will lose a single hair from his head. And after he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of all of them, and he broke it and began to eat, and they were encouraged. Isn't that awesome? After being hopeless, just one guy telling them, hey, God's got this, made the entire ship encouraged. And they ate some food themselves, and although there were 276 of us on board, when they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the rest of the food over into the sea. You know, they were having some faith at this time, weren't they? They were going, Paul said, go ahead and eat and then throw out the rest of the food. God's got this. And they said, yeah, we can do it. We got faith in God. Now, but then watch what happens. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could, cutting loose the anchors. There it was. They cut the anchors loose. They left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. And then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. And when the bow stuck fast and would not move, the stern was broken into pieces by the pounding of the surf. So they didn't make it all the way to land, but the ship was destroyed in such a way they weren't going to be able to keep everybody on the boat anymore. Everybody was going to have to go their own ways and make it to land. Then, watch this, the soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping. Now, back then, if you were a soldier and you let one of your prisoners escape, you would sometimes have to take on whatever their sentence was. So if they were sentenced to 10 years in jail and you let them escape, you got to serve out that 10 years for them. If they were sentenced to death, you would have to die. So here the soldiers are going, well, we'll just kill them. And that way we'd... Now, isn't this interesting? Just a few minutes earlier, they were trusting God enough to throw their food overboard. But as soon as another distraction hits, they're suddenly going, okay, we got to take care of this ourselves. You know, we've got to take care of this ourselves. Let me say a couple of things right here as we're concluding. The first thing I want you to see is Paul told them to eat, right? And sometimes we get on our little faith island. God's going to take care of everything. And then there's things that we need to do physically. There's things that we need to do pragmatically in our life. And we go, oh, no, I'm just trusting God. I'm just trusting God. You know, sometimes trusting God is using your good sense to eat when it's time to eat or to work or to do things. You know, just trusting God isn't saying, I'm not going to do anything. Trusting God means I trust God. Now, let's see what God has given me to work. But the second thing, I want to get mad at those sailors those soldiers for wanting to kill the prisoners. It says to prevent them from escaping. It says, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out his plan, and he ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest were to get there on planks or on pieces of the ship. In that way, everyone reached land safely. So you get that final picture of them floating, that kind of shipwreck kind of feel, them floating. But here's what I want you to get as we close today, that there's so many times that I have those moments in my life where I really focus on God. And I do something that's really just so faithful, you know, where I just go, look what I'm doing for God. And in the very next minute, as soon as I lose focus, I'm over here going, let's kill the prisoners. You know, I forget about God. It's all about, I need to take care. Isn't this weird how we do that? One second, we are so full of faith. And the next second, it's like we have no faith at all. Now, the difference in those two pictures of when we have so much faith and when we don't have any faith at all is what we're focusing on. You see, it's not a question of faith. We all have enough faith in us probably to move a mountain, right? It's just this much faith is all you need. It's that focus that allows us to use our faith. And so as you're going about your days this week, as you're going out into our community, realize that when Satan comes in and tries to distract you with cars breaking down and sicknesses and financial issues, and you're sitting here going, no, God, you know, I don't understand. I was faithful over here. Why are you letting this happen? That's when you shift your faith. Not your faith, your focus. You leave your faith on God. You shift your focus in the middle of those distractions and say, the same God that I trusted over there is the same God I'm going to trust right here. And it might be a 14-day storm, but I'm going to keep focusing on God, and my focus is going to feed something. And if I'm focused on God, it's going to feed my love and my desire and my joy for God. That's your challenge this week, church. Listen, as we leave out of here today, let me tell you a couple of things. And first, to feed that faith, part of it is being around Christians. I'm glad you're here today. Tonight at 6 o'clock, we've got our overflow prayer time. It's another time where you just come and we share testimonies and we sing songs and we pray. Let me challenge you. Come on tonight. It's a great way on Sunday night to kind of focus in on God. Another thing, last week, oh, this is a praise. I got up and I told you I needed volunteers for preschool ministry. Can I tell you, last week I said, would you be willing to volunteer for a six-week rotation? I needed about eight people to volunteer for a six-week rotation in our preschool ministry. And I think I am one person away right now. One person away from having that first six-week rotation done. Now, here's another challenge for you. In August, September, in October, I'm going to need a second rotation. Another 6 weeks of people. So you haven't gotten out of it yet just because I filled that one. If God is moving you to serve in our church, it's an easy way to say, hey, I'll commit 6 weeks to serve rocking babies or working with preschoolers. There's a table set up there with a sign-up sheet. And maybe right now in your life, you've just never given your life to God. You talk about a hard time to focus on God if you don't have a relationship with God. So if we're coming into this closing time right now, let me challenge you. If there's questions you have about God or your faith, I'm here. I'd love to talk to you today about it, or we can set up a time this week where we could talk. I'd love to tell you how you can grow your faith stronger or start your faith walk. As always, maybe there's other things going on right now. Maybe you don't have a church family and you're looking for a place and say, I want Waller Baptist to be my family. We had a great family join last week. Hey, guys. And it is so wonderful to see God pulling people to our church. Don't let Satan distract you by stuff going on in life. If he tells you, hey, it's time to join, as soon as you get that opportunity, you know, take that opportunity. Maybe that's today. Maybe there's other things you just need prayer for. As we enter this time, we'll let the Holy Spirit do what the Holy Spirit does. I'll be down front.